Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back to the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. So excited you are here. I am Sean Penrod, and I cannot wait to share our amazing guest with you today. But before we do, thank you to Paragon City Games for sponsoring the show, as well as to you, the listeners, and the patrons. Thank you so much for supporting the show directly, patrons, and really helping me build a team that makes this show happen. I love doing these interviews for you and bringing you the tips and tricks that you need to take your game to the next level, and it wouldn't be possible without you. So I had a blast at San Diego Comic-Con last week. It was so fun. I'm hoping to put out a bonus Comic-Con coverage episode, but we'll see if I have enough content to put together and just kind of fill you guys in on what was going on, what happened. And the Magic the Gathering panel on Saturday was pretty sweet, so I can at least tell you about that, right? Speaking of Magic events, we have the Pro Tour this weekend. Hello! Pretty excited that I'm always excited when another Pro Tour rolls around. We get to see what the pros are doing with the new set. Of course, we had the two Grand Prix last weekend, one of which was in Kyoto, so it will be very interesting to see if any of the top eight are able to take their skills into the Pro Tour and just smash the limited portion there, right? That'd be so cool. So, best of luck to everyone, especially past guests who are at the Pro Tour. Go crush it, and I look forward to inviting the top 16 players onto the show to hear about their experience and how they do what they do. And that's really it for the top of the interview portion. We have a fantastic guest from Down Under coming to us today, so without further ado, let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm really excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is an Australian grinder and the captain of Team EXP. He's made the top eight of World Magic Cup 2016 with Team Australia and is the champion of Grand Prix Sydney 2017. Coming to us from Canberra, Australia, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, James Wilkes. James, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Sean. Thanks.
Excellent. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
I sure am.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Jim, you can do so on Twitter. He's at Force of Wilkes. So pretty easy to find on there. You can connect with him, ask him a follow-up question, say thanks for being on the show, all that good stuff there on Twitter. So, Jim, we would love to learn a little bit about you outside of Magic before we do the whole Magic thing. So are you born and raised in Canberra, Australia?
Yes. Yeah. I've been here, all my life. Except for, I guess a very brief stint as a kid, in Hong Kong.
Excellent. Wow. What'd you do there?
Grew up. I was 1 year old at the time.
Oh, so. Wow. All right. Cool.
So it doesn't really count, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I guess not. But, I went to Hong Kong once and I mean, I was older than one, so I was able to, I made sure I went and bought some cards. I think I got a couple Baneslayer Angels to round up my deck and played Magic just to say that I played Magic in Hong Kong. So that was pretty cool. So yeah, only been there once.
I've definitely visited a few times now, and I still remember going through and finding little card stores and back alleys to play there.
Nice. And so, what are you doing these days? Is Magic all you do? Are you in uni? Are you working? What's up?
So I work as a documentary editor, and that takes up a lot of my time. And Magic is what takes up the second most amount of time, I guess. it's definitely my focus is film and television.
Love it. So documentary editor, that's very specific, which I think is awesome to be specific like that. So, I mean, people just know, hey, if I have a documentary, then Jim's the guy, or how does that work?
So I work for a private company, we do all sorts of stuff for different distributors around the world, and I'm not the guy to go to if you have a documentary idea, unfortunately. I'm the guy who ends up working on other people's ideas most of the time, yeah. But hopefully working to the point where I can do my own ideas and pitch my own things.
That's great. What are some of the documentaries that you've worked on?
Well, I just finished a show I just worked on, just aired on the History Channel here in Australia. It's called 101 Who Changed the 20th Century. So it's like a countdown show.
Yeah.
About different historical figures and how they affected, modern life, I guess.
Excellent. Yeah. That's really neat.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I can tell you, like, just I really enjoy going to work.
Love it. And so what got you interested in film and editing and TV and stuff in the first place?
I guess I just kind of wanted to tell stories. Mm. It's always been sort of a passion of mine, I guess. I definitely want to get into more drama sort of stuff eventually, but as far as Canberra goes, documentary editing is a pretty sweet job to be having.
Okay. And that's, I love stories as well. I think they, they're so powerful. They really connect human beings and really, just bring our experiences to life for sure. And on that note of stories, we would love to hear your story, your origin story of how you got into Magic. So the very first time you ever saw or played with cards, Magic cards, what was that story like? Tell us.
Okay. Well, I was, as a kid, I was about, I think about 10 or so. I played a lot of chess. That was sort of the first game I got into with a couple of my friends. And we used to go to like a weekend like chess class sort of thing. You know, there'd be better players. They'd run little sort of tutorial sort of thing, run like a small tournament. And through playing chess, some kids started bringing, you know, this card game to play afterwards. And obviously, you know, chess is a great game and all, but I mean, this card game was Magic, and you know, it's got cool like fantasy like art and stuff like that.
There's
and
no
I was,
pictures in chess.
Yeah, there's no pictures of chess. I can't, like, dragons are cool, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I was very intrigued, and I sort of picked it up from there, and then I just sort of started playing more and more through school with my friends, and yeah, it's basically how I got into it. And then I eventually dropped chess and just kept playing Magic.
I think it's really interesting how many really good Magic players, you know, have a foundation in chess. I think it's really neat. And I love chess. Haven't played for a while, but I think it's really, you know, great game. So I always love when people say, oh yeah, I came from chess. So that's really neat. Like you said, there's a, yeah, just Magic adds that extra element that visual, aesthetically pleasing, you know, kind of element to it. So that's really neat that you came through that, you know, you came about it that way.
Yeah, it's, I definitely think there's a, like some people, Magic is a great game and all, and some people sort of talk about it as just the game sort of aspect, but that flavor aspect of the game kind of goes unnoticed sometimes, especially when in more competitive circles, I guess. But it really does add that extra bit to the game, which is, yeah,
totally
enticing,
agree.
I guess.
Totally agree. So do you have any siblings that you, you know, grew up with, you know, playing chess and transitioned to Magic, or were you kind of the only game player in your household or what?
No, I'm an only child, so no siblings, but just no one in the household, but a lot of friends who played, and a lot of friends who still play as well.
So do you remember what that very first set was that you played?
the first set I played was Onslaught Block, and I think Legions was just coming out, so the first pack of cards I ever got was the Sliver theme deck from Legions, and yeah, that was an interesting time.
Nice. And do you have a favorite set?
Favorite set. It's probably going to be, I thought about that. Probably Kamigawa Block, I think. Can we just Kamigawa? I just really loved the flavor behind it.
the Japanese mythology.
Yeah, your Japanese culture stuff. I can study Japanese through school, and I just really
excellent.
Yeah, I just really enjoyed that sort of like touch to the game, I guess.
So, do you know Japanese?
Not anymore. Oh, okay. I sort of dropped it after I got into uni, and decided to focus on my film studies instead.
So, along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
I would say Sphinx's Revelation.
Ooh, excellent. Now, for those of us who don't know, what is that card? What does it do? And why do you like it?
It is X, white, blue, blue. For an instant, you gain X life and you draw X cards. It's probably my favorite card because it got me to my first Pro Tour. But it also sort of defined a control strategy. And I really, really enjoyed playing control for a while. I still do, I guess. But it's you know, it's the card that does it all, right? You it gains you like a whole bunch of life and draws you a whole bunch of cards, so you pull ahead on resources against your opponent, whilst also blanking an important turn of damage. Mm. And then you could use that to leverage usually in conjunction with cards like Elixir of Immortality, which would let you shuffle your graveyard back in. So you could put your Sphinx's Revelations back in your deck and just keep drawing more cards. And I don't know, that it was just a great feeling drawing like 7, then 8, then 9 cards.
That feels nice. That's good.
Oh, yeah.
So it got you to your first Pro Tour. What event was that? And then what was your first Pro Tour?
That was a block-constructed Pro Tour for Journey into Nyx. So it was a Born of the Gods PTQ, I think it was. And yeah, I was playing blue-white control, which got me there.
Excellent. Ah, that's a lot of fun. So when you started taking, you know, Magic seriously and started, you know, becoming more competitive in it, what was an early challenge that you struggled with as a player?
I think, Yeah, so an early challenge I struggled with was the idea that I didn't have to try and win all the time. Sort of understanding that you can have a bad tournament and that's okay. Because you know, when you get competitive, you know, you want to win everything, right? And especially in Australia, like we don't have a lot of sort of like premier level of tournaments to play. So flunking out of one, you sort of feel a bit, eh. I think it took me a while to sort of figure out that I didn't have to put so much pressure on myself to try and win. I didn't have to, you know, tilt out if that happened. So yeah, I think that was one of those moments.
So what did that do for you? Once you had that realization, did you notice a change in the way you played or anything? Like, what did that do for you?
It let me become a little bit more detached from my results, I guess. Which just really helped a mental game. Like, I don't know, you're playing a tournament, you take your first loss, and then suddenly the rails fall off, and you just keep, it just snowballs from there. And you keep losing because you keep beating yourself up about it. And that was pretty detrimental, I guess. Realizing that, you know, your own enjoyment, your own happiness or whatever, wasn't attached to the outcome of your matches was a pretty big one. And I found I had much more success after I sort of was just playing Magic, like one match at a time for the sake of playing Magic, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And what did you do to help, like, detach yourself, to get into that mindset? Was it just like, yeah, like, what did you do? Because I'm very fascinated with how people actually do that.
How did I detach myself from it?
Yeah, like, you know, once you kind of realize, oh, you know, I don't have to be tied up in the results every single time, like, what did you actually do to do that?
I think an important one was just taking actual breaks between matches of Magic, just sort of take a walk outside, that sort of thing, like actually breathe and not sit there and just sort of stress out about what I just, you know, the match I just played, that sort of thing. I don't know, like talking with friends and stuff like that as well was pretty helpful. Like if I felt like I was about to tilt, talking to someone and seeing if they could, you know, help sort of rationalize everything was a good one. And having friends who are also competitive in the game, and them sort of, you know, pushing you and helping you in those moments was definitely a big one, I guess.
Yeah, excellent. It's really important and neat to have that support network, you know, of other players that you can lean on and talk to and bounce off of and that help push you forward. So that's really important.
Yeah. Like having a positive community presence is huge. It's huge.
So what were some of the bigger events that, you know, as you're coming up, obviously, that you look back on and you remember as, oh, that was an important event, or that was a cool win, or what were some of the milestones that you have made on your journey up to your Grand Prix?
So I guess the point where I sort of got competitive with the game was a World Magic Cup qualifier a couple of years back, I guess, when Blue-White Delver was the deck to play, I guess. It was my first top eight at a reasonably competitive event, I guess. And it sort of got me into the mindset that I could, you know, I could play the game at a reasonably high level and keep it rolling, I guess. So there was that. That was sort of like the starting point, I guess. My first PTQ win, as I said before, for Journey to the Knicks. Playing on my first pro tour was a hugely eye-opening experience. I mean, like, realizing that there is a tournament out there where, you know, everyone gives it their all, and it's just, you know, it's not this like weird sharky environment. It is just people trying to play the game at the highest level, and everyone was just super friendly there. And it was really surprising. I don't know, like I had this weird misconception that the pro tour would just be this sort of you know, cutthroat tournament, but everyone there was good, and they knew they were good, so they didn't really have to be, they didn't have to like feel like they had to lord it over anyone or anything like that. And it was a great tournament to play. And after I played that, I just knew I wanted to qualify again. So there was that PTQ win into that Pro Tour, and then last year the World Magic Cup qualifier. So I qualified for Team Australia. And then we top eighted in the World Magic Cup.
Yep.
And yeah, that was the first premier event I've top eighted, and it was sweet.
Man, that's so fun. And we actually heard something similar from other you know, players who went to their first Pro Tour or looking back at the first Pro Tour saying, yeah, like you said, you know, just the level of play there is, you know, it's high and it's just really good. And the vibe and the atmosphere is just positive. And so that's really neat. And so many people said, you know, like, I really just want to get back to the Pro Tour because once I played there, it was just so much fun and they want to be in that environment again. So, and I love how you put it that everyone there is good and they know they're good. So that's just like a given, right? And so they don't have to lord over anybody. And so everybody, you know, is you know, nice and cordial and they're just playing Magic at a high level competitively, obviously, but just being really nice about it. So I think it's really neat that you had a similar experience and I love your little milestones along the way and it's pretty neat. So do you have any players, either pro or local, that you have looked up to as you have developed as a player?
Yeah, there's a few local players that I looked up to. In Canberra, we've had sort of like a hotspot of Magic play for Australia, at least. So we had like Jeremy Neiman and Dan Unwin here for a bit. But two players I really look up to who are still in Canberra right now, actually. John Paul Kelly, who played on the Pro Tour a few times a couple years back. He's just a really nice guy and really good player as well. And I learned a lot from him he probably doesn't think I learned a lot from him, but I definitely tried to pick his brain as much as possible, whenever possible, about Magic, I guess. And it really sort of helped me sort of, I guess, find that competitive player mindset that in such a small community as Canberra was kind of, it didn't feel like it was always there. And the other player I really look up to was Yvonne Schroeder, who I actually teamed with for Grand Prix Sydney. He's kind of more of an old school player as well. He's played, I think, a couple of Worlds for New Zealand, and yeah, he's just a very good player, and he was probably the source of a lot of my like level up moments in the game, locally, well, just in general. Getting crushed by him in many events and seeing how he played really helped open my eyes to, I guess, more competitive play.
Excellent. Well, I will be actually speaking with Yvonne tomorrow, my time, and then his, yeah, at same time actually, and then his episode will come out probably a week or so after yours because there's a couple other interviews in between. But yeah, that's really neat. So we'll pop him on the show and get his perspective as well. So
yeah,
that's
that,
really
that'd
neat.
Be great to see.
Yeah, it's so fun to have those, you know, those Magic mentors either that we know personally, like you shared yours, or that we, you know, kind of admire from afar and that we learn from. And like you said, sometimes they don't think that we're learning from them, but you know, we do watch and observe and absorb and learn everything that we can. And I love how you've kind of given us, you know, a sneak peek into, you know, your journey, some of the big events that have stood out to you, and diving into those a little bit more. All of our Magic journeys have ups and downs, highs and lows. So we want to learn specifically from your worst Magic moment. What was that? Take us there. Tell us that story. And then more importantly, what did you learn from that experience?
My worst Magic moment. Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know. I've associated a lot of positives with the game. And yeah, I think I've tried very hard to try and make sure that what I take out of each tournament is a positive rather than a negative.
Well, that's good.
But I'm just, yeah, I'm just, sorry. That's a tough one.
Or a time that you something you learned, not learned the most, but a really poignant learning point that you can look back on and be like, ah, like this one time I learned this lesson, and here's the story.
My worst Magic moment was probably in a Grand Prix for Zendikar in Sydney. So it was just Zendikar sealed. And I was, I don't remember how old I was. Yeah, I was still pretty new to like the competitive scene, I guess. It was one of the first Grand Prix I played, if not the first. And anyways, basically I'm playing this blue red deck with Hellkite Charger as one of its bombs. It was like I think it was 5 red for a 5/5 flying dragon with maybe it has haste. But basically, it would attack, and you could pay, I think it's 7 mana, to untap it and get another combat step afterwards. And, I mean, look, it's a pretty sweet bomb, right? And I remember having this, like, sweet board position where I just didn't think I could lose. And my opponent has a Chandra Ablaze, which wasn't... It was, like, one of the worst Chandras ever printed. It's like a 4 red with a bunch of strange abilities. But one of them is both players discard their hand and draw 3 cards. Anyways, I remember attacking my Charger. My opponent's on 10 life, so I can attack for 5, pay for 7 mana, untap, and attack again. And he's dead, right? And I just did... I just figured I'd just go for it. Without thinking at all. I just figured it was like, oh, he's dead, I'll just go for it. And my opponent casts Into the Royal, which is a card which returns a non-land permanent to their hand. So obviously I've paid 7 mana to untap my dragon. So I'm tapped out, and now it's back in my hand. And my opponent's not dead. And their Chandra Ablaze forces me to discard the dragon next turn. And there goes my way of winning this game. And I've gone from looking like I'm going to definitely win to there's not really anything left in my deck at this point. And I just remember just in that moment being ridiculously confident, maybe a little arrogant, I guess, at that point. And it was kind of a humbling moment to realize that I really didn't know that much about the game because I wasn't playing as tightly as I thought I was. And so looking back on that and using that as a point of reference for, I guess, future matches is that, you know, always try and play... I should always try and play as tight as possible, and don't get overconfident, I guess.
Yeah.
Always try and rationalize positions you're sitting in and use that as a stepping stone to really think about the game you're playing.
Man, what? Yeah, wow. What could you have done different?
I just didn't have to pay for 7 mana. I think I just would have won the game because I attacked him for 5, and if he bounces, I just play it again. He just has no other way of answering it at that point.
Right.
I had a chat with the guy at the end of the match, and he was like, "Yeah, I was out of answers. Like, the Into the Royal plus the Chandra was the only way he was going to deal with a 5/5 dragon."
So you were thinking you attack this turn and then attack again next turn instead of using the ability?
Yes. So rather than what investing 7 mana.
Yeah. I was going to say couldn't he have just done Into the Royal and Chandra on his turn, and then you would have been in the same situation?
There was something else about it.
Okay.
I can't remember the exact
story.
That's fine.
I was like, yeah, because obviously he did that on your turn when you were tapped out and then cycled your bomb with the Chandra. So I was just thinking, well, couldn't he just do that on his turn? So I didn't know.
Yeah, I think he might have actually just been dead on the first attack and I paid 7 for no reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God,
Something like that. Yeah, okay. Something about the situation where he was, it was like just a huge screw up. The 3 cards I remember are Into the Royal, Chandra, and my Hellcat Charger.
And your Charger, yeah. Okay. Had you seen Into the Royal before?
I don't recall. I don't think I had at that point. But yeah. But basically, the point was that I just did not need to pay your 7 mana on the spot.
What a great lesson. And I really appreciate you drawing out that, you know, don't get overconfident, you know, even though you might have a really good board state, you know, still, you know, think through and do what you need to do. Don't go all out if you don't have to. And like you said, it really opened your eyes to, you know, tight plays and really just kind of getting into the game a little bit deeper. And that's a perfect story. We're really glad that you shared that. Thank you. So the flip sides are our highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
My proudest Magic moment was probably top 8ing the World Magic Cup last year. Maybe I could replace that with the winning Grand Prix Sydney now, actually.
What did top 8ing the World Magic Cup, what did that mean to you? What did that feel like?
It meant a lot of validation after years of playing the game. And it was incredibly good to be playing, representing Australia alongside a bunch of my friends who are on my team as well to get to top 8, I guess. Because I think Australia has not done particularly well in the Magic Cups in the past few years. And, you know, just sort of defying the odds to get there was, it's just an incredible feeling. Yeah.
And being a champion of a Grand Prix, what's that like?
It's still kind of settling in, I guess. The funny story is, I guess, that about a week before the Grand Prix, we sort of laid out a bunch of like team goals between me and the other members of Team XP. One of the goals was to, I guess, qualify for another Pro Tour and top 8 a Grand Prix. And obviously, in the next week, we achieved both of those goals, which was pretty amusing. I mean, Simon, who was also on the team as well, kept telling me that I was I'd sort of cast a gypsy curse on ourselves by saying that I wanted a top 8 in the next Grand Prix, when at team Grand Prix, it's only top 4 makes the qualifier.
Oh, so, that's funny. Yeah.
So. So that would have been interesting if we top 8ed, like a curse of the monkey paw, right? It's like you get your wish, but it's not quite
exactly.
Not quite, yeah.
That's funny. Oh man! So let's dive into that Grand Prix a little bit more. So what did you guys do? So you talked about a team that you guys had, but what was your preparation like leading up to the Grand Prix?
So we're I basically prepared as a team. So Team XP is like a group of about 13 or 14 of us in Canberra. We're just steadily trying to get better at Magic. So what we did is we split into our groups of three. So we'd have 4 3-man teams and a couple of people who didn't go to the Grand Prix. And we set up about 7 sealed pools, team sealed pools that we built and rotated amongst our groups and played a few matches out with. And we used those as, I guess, sort of key learning points for amongst ourselves to sort of see where everyone was at in the format, and we started sort of collating our information and building from there. And that was the core of our testing process, followed by a few additional builds and team sealed events as well that were run in local stores. It sort of devolved into a few extra like late nights with Simon, me, and Ivan just by ourselves, doing extra builds and working on our communication. I guess we had a bit of a leg up in that having been to the World Magic Cup and played that team event, we did a lot of prep on communication there. So we sort of realized that it was pretty important to, you know, be able to ask the right questions in a tournament. So we definitely worked on that. We had a few issues at the start where a teammate might like lean over and ask a really complicated question like, you know, what do I do here? Which sounds like a simple question, but it's really jumping out of your game and jumping into their game and trying to get all this information. It was very complicated. Uh-huh. And we wanted to make sure that as a team, we smoothed all of that out. So, we did all the building, but we put the focus on communication as a team.
I love it.
And that was a big part of our testing process.
Man. So, a few things. First, you guys, the whole team had 7 team sealed pools, and then you would kind of rotate those around. And I think that's awesome because what I envision is, you know, one team building what they can out of that pool and then playing, and then another team building what they can out of that pool, and then you guys get to talk about it. Why did you do this? Why did you do that? And kind of comparing and contrasting and seeing what one group saw that another group didn't. And I imagine that discussion and that process and doing that many times with all these pools was very helpful.
It was incredibly helpful. Okay. So we would record all the decks we built. So we just sort of took photos of the different builds, and some were starkly different to other pools. And it was interesting sort of getting people's rationales for why they built their pools in the way they did compared to everyone else building differently. And then I guess the point of the games we played with the pools wasn't really to see which were which decks were best, because we just didn't have time to get the full amount of repetitions in
right.
that would give us the right amount of data for that. But it was more to sort of just get, you know, that was the communication building part where you'd play your matches out with the decks you built. But just sort of being able to just draw on 12 people's worth of ideas for every pool was very eye opening, because we all have played Magic for a different amount of time. Some people have like more experience or less experience, and just sort of being able to get us all onto the same level was huge.
And on the communication piece, what I love to learn about that. What are some better questions instead of what should I do here? what were some of the things that you guys focused on, and what were some of the, you know, how were you able to communicate and ask good questions in the middle of the game?
So asking simpler questions was the big one.
Okay.
So rather than asking, so if you're afraid your opponent has a trick or something, getting help on, you know, reminders on like what tricks exist in the format for the mana your opponent's leading up, because that's just something that, you know, inherently we should all have learned for this format. So things that don't require too much contextual information is what we were looking at. Yeah, it was you know, things like mulligan decisions and stuff like that were probably more of the involved points. And I guess any moment where it was just not too you didn't require too much contextual information. One of the things we did do to try and ease all of that, or like all the interruptions and stuff like that, was we took notes the whole time. So we'd write down cards we saw from our opponent's deck, and that would help as our teammates. Like if we finished our match, we came over to watch our friends play, we could just read their notes and just see
good.
Just a snapshot of what they played against. And it was much easier than distracting them and saying, hey, what are they playing? And then trying to rattle off a list of cards and sort of remove yourself from the mindset of the game.
That's great. I love how that was a focus of yours to get the communication piece down. You came up with, you know, little tools to help with that. I think, awesome. You know, keeping notes throughout so then the teammates can just get caught up without interrupting you, because you don't want to, like you said, take your mental focus off and then try and dive back in. And that's really neat. And obviously it paid dividends. So that is fantastic.
Yeah, it certainly paid off.
Excellent. So as you have played Magic for many years in different types of events and against players all over the world, what is the biggest mistake that you see players make?
Biggest mistake I see players make? That's an interesting one. I think biggest mistake I've seen players make is trying to get too smart with their cards. I know it sounds kind of a strange one, but trying to like set up situations where you look smart rather than playing right, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, like you might have like a sweet, sweet value play lined up, you know, turns in advance. You're like, this is going to be sweet. I'm going to play this and it's going to, you know, rattle off a chain of events that'll look really cool, and there'll be a lot of like interaction rather than just, I don't know, playing your creature for the turn and passing. Which probably might even win you the game next turn. That's probably the one I've seen the most. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the exact example I saw just last week, actually. I can't remember it, unfortunately. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Just taking notes here. So playing, trying to get too smart with the cards and not playing what is the optimal play, even though it's less flashy. So.
Yeah. Getting super flashy is sort of a. Can be a bit of a trap, I guess. It's like, it makes for a sweet story, don't get me wrong. Especially if you win the game. But if you're giving up percentage points, trying to, make that flashy play, it's probably not the best thing to do.
So what can we do to avoid that mistake?
Really, I guess if the best way to do it is just really constantly think about your game actions and why you're doing them. If like, is my game actually going to progress me to a point where I'm going to win the game? And is there a more efficient way I can do that? Usually there is a more efficient way to avoid these sort of flashy moments. Yeah. So having a plan and sticking to it is probably the easiest way of sort of sorting that out, I guess. So if your plan is to, you know, kill your opponent in two turns of creatures in a combat trick, make sure that everything you do is working towards enacting that plan.
And along the lines of learning, we would love to know what you have learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life.
I think the biggest one I've learned is to approach things objectively and not tilt out. So I don't know, even in like a work environment, things can get high pressured. Always being able to like mentally take a step back and look at the problem in front of you and think about it from an objective standpoint rather than a really, emotional standpoint has been a really important skill to draw from Magic. It's very easy to get frustrated by a lot of things, right? And being able to sort of detach yourself from that and really approach it from a logical manner has been rewarding.
That's very helpful. So true. I really Yeah, I love all the lessons learned, and that's definitely a good one. You know, being able to be calm through different events, and it applies to life. You know, not getting that, like you said, not freaking out and getting all emotional about, you know, certain situations that we might not even be able to control, but just kind of approaching it objectively and finding the best solution, and then just being, you know, happy or okay with the outcome, knowing that we did our preparation, our analysis, and made the best decision that we could with the information that we had at the time. So. Love it. Absolutely love it. What have you learned about yourself from playing Magic, Jim?
Let's see. That's a good question. I think I've learned that I really value positivity. And I don't think I really would have clued into that as much if I hadn't played Magic. By playing Magic, I know you sort of, you know, so you get exposed to some sort of toxic ideas sometimes, or yeah. Sort of toxic communities, but at the same time, that sort of helps you realize that there are, you know, when you do see like the you know, the pillars of the community, people who are being these sort of positive contributors to it, they really stand out, and it's this really great thing to see. You know, someone who helps out like a new player, or someone who can come to turn up to for advice, that sort of thing. I think that's it's something I just hadn't really. To really take a notice of, I guess, too much. And I think Magic sort of put it really sort of made it more visible to me. Mm-hmm.
So true. That we've all been there, people who are just always negative, you know, talking about, in the Magic sense, always talking about, you know, their losses and the other person was like, you know, so lucky or whatever. And in life, people who just find the wrong in everything, you know, and then we've always been around those people who are the opposite of that, and we can definitely feel which one's better, you know, and the positive people are just so much more fun to be around and uplifting, and you know, while situations don't always go as planned, you know, life isn't as bad for them, you know, and I think it's because we attract what we put our attention on. And so people who, you know, as we strive to be more positive, then we'll weather those storms and, you know, we'll notice the good things. And, you know, we might have the exact same amount of good and bad happening in our life. It's just that if you focus on the good, then hey, life's not that bad. I that's what I found, at least. So I think that's really neat. Now, what are you working on as a player? What are some of your shortcomings in Magic that you're trying to shore up?
So right now I'm trying to work on community involvement, if that makes sense. Like, it's so we've got this team, Team XP, that we've sort of started up in the we've been around for a little while now, but we sort of started putting a name to ourselves and you know, really trying to leave our mark on the Magic community, at least here in Australia. And now we've got a few qualified for the Pro Tour again, and maybe the world.
Excellent.
But, you know, baby steps, right? Yeah. But one of the most important things that I've been trying to work on is working as a group and trying to get this team to the point where we are a positive pillar of the community. And I think that's where I'd like to get us all to. And trying to figure out how to manage a team of people. I said, where there's about, I think it's 14 of us. It's not easy. I haven't really, in a film and television sense, I've never really been a producer who sort of, you know, they manage all these different people, all these different sort of loose ends. I've always been the kind of person who's down in the trenches, who's always working on, you know, what's right in front of me by myself. And learning to do that as a team has been interesting, to say the least.
Excellent. Well, best of luck with that. Like, you're right. Like, when you kind of take a couple steps up the chain and you're now the producer, in those terms, there's a lot more, you know, moving parts. And when they're people, then there's a lot more that goes into it. It's a lot more complex than just managing, you know, systems or processes or whatever. So that's excellent. And what, let's see, based off of your Grand Prix, what Pro Tour are you queued up for?
So we're queued up for Pro Tour, I think it's Pro Ixalan.
Okay, so.
The one in Albuquerque.
Nice, yeah. So not Kyoto.
Not Kyoto, no.
All right, so what are you going to do to prepare? How are you going to, you know, how are you going to get ready? What does Pro Tour prep look like for you and Team XP?
So it's going to look like a lot of reasonably late nights, I guess, at Simon's house, I guess, where we usually have been testing recently. before, I think for this Pro Tour, there's actually it's a delayed Pro Tour, so it's not going to be the first one. Yeah, yeah. So there might be some moto grinding in there.
It's like 5 or 6 weeks in or something. It's pretty late.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be interesting because, you know, we'll have a pretty defined format by then.
Mm-hmm.
We'll, especially with like Magic Online, we'll have an idea of where the format's going, which will be pretty interesting because I think one of the things we struggled with trying to prepare for the previous Pro Tours has always been, you know, we're not a super team. We're just a ragtag bunch of Aussies usually. and I guess being able to actually, so tackling a new format's always been kind of tough because we only have so many people and, right. You know, we're all kind of used to just picking up one of the best decks and learning that new metagame, I guess. So yeah, we're gonna band together. We're gonna test at Simon's house. We're gonna turn up and play Grand Prix Phoenix the weekend before.
Excellent.
And then probably lock ourselves in a house in Albuquerque and play a lot of Magic.
Wow. Best of luck when that comes up. And I think it's going to be, like you said, very interesting. Somebody else made the point that you just made, which is that this change, you know, they're hoping it's more beneficial to the non-super teams because, you know, like you said, the super teams, they get in there, they crack it, and, you know, they're just really good at that part of it. While the other players, you know, once it's more established, like you said, they're pretty good about picking that stuff up and then tuning and tweaking and finding what works. And so it's going to be really cool to see if it kind of, I guess, levels the playing field, for lack of better words, and gives all the teams, you know, an equal shot at you know, performing. So I'm really excited to see how that goes.
I am too, definitely.
So as you play Magic at these big events, there are long days. Do you have any tournament day tips to help us stay on point and keep focus?
Drink a lot of water. Mm-hmm. Stay hydrated. And like it's the same point. carry some snacks on you. So we've always got a running joke amongst our group now of buying copious amounts of muesli bars and like bananas and apples, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. And just always having a stash, I guess. just because I don't know, especially the Grand Prix or something, it's very easy to run out of energy and you just don't realize it.
Yeah,
like. Going round to round from, like, 9 a.m. or something to 8 p.m. at night, you can easily, like, miss out on, like, lunch, not have a good breakfast, that sort of thing. Take care of your body.
Yeah, take care of your body, for sure. Now, we are pulling into the home stretch here, and I want to remind the Prodigies, if you want to connect with Jim, you can do so on Twitter at Force of Wilkes is where you can find him. Say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question, and that's where you can connect with him. So, Jim, this has been amazing. What is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize, or something new you want to leave with us here at the end?
Let's see. So no matter how competitive you want to get with Magic, no matter like how good you want to be, always remember that you're playing a game and you're playing against a human being. So try and be a decent human being while playing the game. Try and be a positive force in the game. And even if a loss gets to you, don't attach that loss to the person you're playing against. Try and focus on the positive.
Well, Jim, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time, for sharing your stories and experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you, Sean.
Jim, thank you so much. I absolutely love when I get to connect with people from your side of the world. It's so amazing. Prodigies out there, you know where to get the show notes. It's at mtgprotutor.com/James Wilkes. James Wilkes. So look them up there. You'll get links to any resources that were mentioned, as well as a synopsis of what we talked about today. So, Jim, thank you again for coming on the show. Absolutely loved it. I want to remind everybody, tune into the Pro Tour, see what the pros are doing with the new sets, figure out some new archetypes, and hopefully you have some of the cards that will do well already. As the winning decks start shaking out to the top, the prices of those cards will definitely be going up. So, to close out, I do want to say thank you again to Paragon City Games. Love your support. I'm really excited about the cool new counters that Paragon City has made that we'll be giving away in a contest here coming up soon, so stay tuned for that. And patrons, thank you so much for your support. Because of you, the show goes on. And if you are interested in becoming a patron,
You can go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon to learn more about that. Basically, you pledge any amount you want per episode. You set a monthly limit so you don't go out of budget. And then as a thank you, each and every month, you will be entered into the drawing that we do for patrons only, where you get to win a sweet product like a bundle or arch enemy sets or commander decks or from the vault. Just whatever's kind of going on that month of Magic, we like to give out some cool, fun stuff. Those prizes, of course, are provided by Paragon City Games. So thank you again for your support. Well, everybody, that's it. I am super pumped to connect with you again real soon. Until then, be safe, get out there and play some Magic. I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.